welcome to Comic Talk Today for Friday, September 14th, 2018. And this is kind of a Therapy Thursday, but on Friday because I'm trying to confuse everybody. Joining me on the show today is Matt Miner, who's got an incredible book called Poser out for Waxwork Comics. I recommend you pick this up. The cool thing about the book is it comes with a vinyl record with an awesome soundtrack. Anyways, Matt and I talked about, of course, Poser, but all the other stuff he's working on. For example, how he put together This Nightmare Kills Fascists from A Wave Blue World, a book that I love, and it's got a ton of creators that you'll recognize. And of course, currently he's working on putting the finishing touches on All We Ever Wanted, Stories of a Better World, which was just kickstarted not long ago. I'm looking forward to reading that one as well. Matt was a fantastic guest. I love everything he had to say. I recommend you check out this book. If your shop does not carry Poser, then by all means, let Matt know or let Waxwork know, and they can get that book into your shop. They can order it from Diamond directly. I hope you enjoy the chat.
Thanks for asking me to be on.
Yeah, I'm excited. You know, I was, after you and I chatted, I went and looked to see what other stuff you did. And I was like, holy crap, I've read like all this guy's stuff.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah.
That's cool. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah, it was awesome.
I get that sometimes. People are like, oh, you're the guy who did that. You know, and it's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. You did the gore book, which I didn't even know was a thing. And a buddy of mine read it and thought it was hilarious. So I picked it up and I realized now that you wrote that. I picked up, I Kill Fascists, or what is it?
Oh, this God. Nightmare Kills
This
Fascist.
Nightmare Kills Fascists. I picked that up at Heroes Con. And, the reason I picked it up is I kind of know Erica Schultz and Andrew Shaw, and they both have stuff in that book. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, okay, you know what? I'm going to go pick this book up. And then I realized when you and I were chatting that you were the guy that put that thing together.
Yeah, with Eric Palicki.
Yeah, with Eric Palicki, which I had no idea.
Yeah. And I have a story in there, too.
You do. Matter of fact, I mean, here's another coincidence. I went back and looked at it. So I was like, well, I wonder if Matt wrote a story in this. And so I'm looking through the book, through the stories, and the one that was actually one of my favorites is the one that you wrote.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the one in the forest. I love that story.
Oh, thanks, man.
Because it reminds really me of, like, I don't know, like the, you know, like old horror shows like Tales from the Crypt and stuff like that? Mm-hmm. It kind of reminded me of that, because you don't really expect the ending to be what it is.
Right.
And I thought that was pretty awesome.
Cool. Thanks, man. Yeah, and it definitely, you're right, it definitely has that kind of cadence and that kind of feel, you know? Where I like anthology stories like that feel like Tales from the Crypt or Tales from the Dark Side, you know, and are we recording already or?
Oh yeah, dude, I'm always recording.
I don't know. but yeah, I like pretty much anything horror. Like there was a comedian once that said something about like, you know, sex is like pizza, you know, even bad pizza is pretty good. And that's how he felt about sex. I feel that way about horror.
Yeah.
Like there's not a whole lot of horror that I don't like. Even the cheesiest found footage movies, like I really like, you know? So, I really like the horror anthologies that feel like that, you know, that have that kind of feeling with like kind of a surprise ending.
That's funny that a comedian would say that. Cause I've, the other one that I've heard is, out of the two like genres, horror and comedy are the most alike because you have to kind of get the timing right and the punchline right. So in terms of structure, they're kind of structured the same way when you tell a joke and when you tell a horror story.
Oh.
Yeah.
I can definitely see that. Yeah, you can't, if you want to deliver that, you know, surprise or that scare. I'm not sure that horror comics ever actually scare unless you're talking about like Junji Ito stuff. you know, if you want that surprise, that gross out, that ew, you know.
Let me ask this, since you just brought that up. Is there something going on with Ito right now? Because Zach Thompson was talking about Ito this morning.
Oh, I don't know.
That's so weird.
I mean, I just, you know, when I think of like the gold standard of horror comics, I think of his just because they actually scare me and they're actually freaky, you know?
Yeah.
Usually for horror stuff, I mean, I need prose because then, you know, you get in your head and whatever's in your head is way scarier than anything anyone could draw, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, I just think of his work as kind of like that that the gold standard. I'm not sure if anything's going on with him. I hope not. I hope he's okay.
Yeah, I know.
In the age of Twitter, whenever I see anyone trending, it's like, oh shit, they died. And, oh, sorry.
No, that's fine. Go for it.
Yeah, you asked me if something's going on. It's like, uh-oh. Hmm. Hope they're okay.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know Zach likes his horror as well, so I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
No, that's cool. I love anthologies. So I know you worked on This Nightmare Kills Fascists. You're working on the Kickstarter that just finished. Same publisher too. I hadn't realized that either.
Yep. Tyler and A Wave Blue World have been really great about. After the Broken Frontier anthology, I saw that, you know, their thing is kind of putting out these high quality, really nicely presented books. Hardcovers and softcovers, and I've been friends with Tyler for a while, so much so that I had him in This Nightmare Kills Fascists. Like, I asked him to write a story, and Eric and I originally thought that we would just self-publish, and then it came time, and it was like, you know what? Why don't we ask Tyler if he wants to publish? And so that's how that happened. So So when we did All We Ever Wanted, the new book, which is way more positive and way less horror, we approached Tyler right away instead of, you know, waiting, and he was on board from the beginning.
That's awesome. I totally missed out on that Kickstarter, but I was talking to a buddy of mine afterwards, and he's like, oh yeah, I backed that one, because I think he and I have a competition. There's myself and two friends. We pretty much back like every Kickstarter we see. And if we don't back it, we end up kind of convincing each other to back a particular book. It's kind of like a competition. But yeah, he got in on it. Cause I reread This Nightmare Kills Fascists this week. And I asked him, I was like, have you guys read this book? And nobody had read it, but he's like, oh yeah, I'm getting a copy because I just backed the Kickstarter. And I was like, okay, well, I'm talking to Matt tonight, so I'll let him know.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
very
that's
cool.
Awesome. Yeah. Do you guys plan on putting that out through previews as well? Because I know This Nightmare Kills Fascists is coming out soon.
Yeah. This Nightmare Kills Fascists is in previews right now. So if anyone listening to this, you can ask your comic shop to order that for you. It's a substantially sized book. It's a really nice book. All We Ever Wanted, we're finishing up production on that right now, getting the last stories in, getting everything lettered. And it's turning out just gorgeous. It's gorgeous. All We Ever Wanted. This Nightmare Kills Fascists, we kept black and white, to kind of go with that whole like creepy and eerie vibe, that old Warren, magazine vibe. But All We Ever Wanted is a collection of stories that's, kind of told against the backdrop of a better future. So it's a lot more positive. It's a lot more like, think of it like Star Trek instead of Mad Max. You know, it's not dystopian futures. It's a positive future, but it's still, you know, problems in that positive future. And the stuff we're getting back is just phenomenal. It's just, blowing me away.
That's awesome.
So that'll be in previews next month.
Did you grow up reading those kind of like anthology magazines?
I grew up reading a lot of like the anthology, paperback books.
Mm, okay.
You know, like the sci-fi ones.
Yeah.
So I read a lot of those, and I grew up reading a lot of like short stories, you know, like the Stephen King collections and things like that. I was in a really small town. The magazine selection was slim, but you know, I could still get books. So I kind of read a lot of books and not so many magazines. But, I mean, we didn't even have a comic store. I had to get my comics through subscriptions. So all my old comics from back in the day had the subscription increase.
Nice.
Yeah.
Now that's cool. I mean, I used to get my comics from this little Korean deli when I lived in New York. It was just a little corner deli by the subway station.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, 7-Eleven. And
yeah, it was awesome.
Grocery stores. I mean, whenever I go to the grocery store with my mom, I'd be like, Mom, let me get a comic. Let me get a comic. Let me get a comic. You know, and looking back, she always made it seem like such a big deal, but it's like, it was 60 cents. It was 75 cents, whatever
sure,
it was.
Sure.
You know, it's like, come on. You were really like drawing it out for me there, weren't you? for 75 cents. I think she just didn't want to spoil me.
No, I'm really happy that there's somebody still doing anthologies. I had somebody that used to work for a publisher who's no longer there, last week on the show. And, it's a publisher that I followed for a long time. And one thing that I always wanted to do was an anthology book. And the thing he said to me is, well, look, anthologies don't sell. And he and I had a little back and forth on that. Because I understand that comic book publishers maybe don't want to do those kind of things, but whenever one comes up, I immediately pick it up because I just love the way that they're formatted. The type of content you find in it is so varied. And it's not something you normally get on everyday comics, right? And very few people actually try to do those kind of things. But I'm really happy that at least there's one company that's willing to take a chance on it, even if it's through Kickstarter, right? I think Kickstarter is probably the best place for this kind of thing.
Absolutely, because you get all those creators who are like, hey, check out my, you know, I have a piece in this book, and then their readers go and back the book, you know. Anthologies do pretty well on Kickstarter.
Absolutely.
I mean, I always liked anthologies too because you get to kind of sample a bunch of different creators, you know. And like in All We Ever Wanted, some of the teams are getting a little experimental with their storytelling. Like Chris Visions has a story in it, and it's one of my favorite stories. And he really took some risks in how he told the story, and it turned out fantastic. And so I'm really excited to see that kind of stuff. And, you know, in an anthology setting, you're able to kind of take those risks and you know, do things that are outside the norm of comics. So I really like that.
Yeah, and especially in Kickstarter, because you have almost a built-in audience, right? You're not putting something out and be like, well, I wonder if anybody's going to go to a shop and pick this up.
Right, yeah. I mean, at the very least, you have the audience that backed the Kickstarter. And if you don't get an audience on Kickstarter, then it doesn't fund and you don't make the book anyway. So.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, at the very least, you have the 600-700 people that backed the Kickstarter.
Sure.
And, you know, I mean, and there's going to be a lot more that pick it up.
How do you find it is working with Kickstarter? Do you find that it's easier than doing things directly with a publisher sometimes? I mean, I know that this is a wave blue world thing. God, it always gets me. I want to say a Brave New World every time.
I know, me too.
but I wonder if it's any easier going through in that direction than going to say like Alterna or another small indie publisher like Aftershock or somebody.
Right. Well, I mean, Aftershock is pretty highly curated. I mean, I'm able to pitch just about anywhere and everywhere, but I don't have Aftershock connections. But I do have like a bunch of Black Mass books.
Lucky for you, I have an Aftershock connection.
Oh, hey. There you go. I can say that I would take a publisher paying the creative team in advance over doing Kickstarter all day, every day. But a lot of publishers, they just don't have the money for that kind of thing.
Yeah.
On a smaller name or an unproven title, you know, they're not willing to plunk down, you know, $15,000 to pay the creative team to make this book.
Sure.
So, 15, 20, 30, whatever it is. So, you know, Kickstarter becomes a necessity. I do see a lot of publishers, kind of relying on Kickstarter where, you know, someone pitches the publisher and the publisher says, yeah, if you can kickstart this and fund it, then it's greenlit. And it's like, well, that kind of sucks because you can only run one Kickstarter at a time, right?
Sure.
Like you have to run it and you have to fulfill. Otherwise your backers are going to be like, what the hell? You know, it's been 2 weeks since the last Kickstarter ended. Why are you starting a new one right now? You know?
Yeah.
So you can't run a bunch at one time. So I guess if you're happy doing one book at a time, you know, Kickstarter only is the way to go. But I don't know. We're playing around with a lot of different things and how to get funding. And you know, I'm happy making comics. And if it means busting my butt on a Kickstarter for a month and then, you know, then so be it.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm curious to know how you got hooked up with Waxworks on your book Poser.
Oh, yeah. That was a friend of mine, Christian Davari. He put me in touch with Waxworks. He had been tapped to do a story for House of Waxworks. And I was saying, you know, I had this pitch with Clay McCormick that was a horror, punk rock horror thing, and was looking for the right home for it. And Chris was like, well, why don't you send it to Waxworks? And I was like, because I don't know who Waxworks is. You know? I mean, I knew about their records. I didn't know they were doing comics.
Yeah.
This was before they had announced their comics. And so he put me in touch with Waxworks, and they were immediately like, yes, we'll do this. So that's how that happened. It was just a perfect fit as far as, you know, because what they're doing is kind of this mix of music and comics, and the punk rock slasher horror story that I had was also a mix of music and comics. So it was just kind of serendipitous.
Yeah, I found the whole concept really interesting. Cause I don't think I've ever seen a comic with a record attached to it. I think Matt Kent just recently did a Kickstarter for one of his books.
Yeah, I saw he did a Kickstarter for a record. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's awesome, right? Cause I mean, I grew up kind of reading some of those read along things. In fact, I was joking around with a buddy of mine who's a big Star Wars fan. I found The Last Jedi read along, and it comes with a little CD.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I'm cool. Sending him a copy of that. And I thought it was hilarious because I hadn't seen that in so long.
Right. Well, the Waxworks thing isn't a read along. So it's actually music composed kind of as a soundtrack to the comic. So, yeah. What it is, two sides of a 7-inch, and it's like pressed, like, you know, the quality vinyl that you expect from Waxworks. So it's pressed, it's a blue and black swirl. It's really nice looking, and the music's composed by Joel Grind from Toxic Holocaust. So each song starts off kind of as a like a hardcore punk, but it's instrumental.
Mm-hmm.
And it morphs into this that future wave type stuff like Carpenter Brute or you know, John Carpenter.
Sure.
So it kind of morphs into that, into this moody, dark wave kind of music, and it's really cool, very, very cool. But yeah, there's no read along. It's just music to accompany the book.
Well, I thought it was interesting because you know, I read a lot of digital comics nowadays. I don't read mm-hmm. as much print. But whenever I find a smaller publisher, I try to do print because a lot of times those books are easier to get in print anyway. Like Scout or Alterner, those kind of publishers. The fact that there's a vinyl attached to this had me really intrigued. I actually ordered a copy,
Thank you.
I could have the vinyl. Because as it turns out, I didn't know I had a vinyl record player, but I do, stashed in the laundry room. Yeah, my wife found it a couple months ago. We were at her parents' house. And uh-huh. she's like, they're like, yeah, we have all your old stuff, like, outside in the shed. So she went out there and looked, and there's a record player that she had from her read-alongs that she had when she was a kid.
Oh, wow.
So at least now I know I have something to play. And it's old, so it doesn't sound great. I'll probably have to, you know, actually buy a record player. But at least it's playable.
It's a trap, I gotta tell you. It's a trap.
Dude, I've heard.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. It's true. you'll end up buying the $100, like the lower end one on Amazon, and you'll end up buying a bunch of records, and then you'll keep getting better records. It's a trap, I swear.
I think it was like 2 years ago, record players were like the highest selling item on Amazon.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah. It was crazy because, you know, records started coming back, I guess, a couple years ago. And for some reason, everyone was just buying them on Amazon. I guess probably buying that cheap one, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's an... what is it, Audio Technica or Technica?
Yeah, yep.
There's a $100 unit, and it's actually pretty good. I mean, for $100,
yeah.
you can't go wrong. It's a decent record player. You got to get a little, you know, you got to get speakers and a little amp. But you know, for $150, you can have records going and not bad. You know,
sure.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about Poser. So. Okay. I'm assuming you were a big horror movie fan in the 80s, and I'm assuming, since you wrote the Gore comic, that you're also a punk rock slash... what would it be? Is that shock rock? Is that what you consider gore? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they were calling it in the early 90s when it was all over, you know, Jerry Springer and,
yes,
and
I remember that.
Sally Jesse Raphael and the Joan Rivers show. And they were like lamenting, oh, my God, this shock rock, it's destroying our kids. But yeah, I mean, I call it heavy. It's heavy metal. I mean, it's performative, like art and metal.
Yeah,
is what I consider gore. You know, if you're only listening to the CDs, you're not getting the whole thing. If you're only going to the shows, you're not appreciating music. You know, it's definitely a combination of the two, like the performance art and the music.
Well, I think that's how they started too, right? Weren't they art majors in college?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's how they got together. They were all in Richmond, and they were all artists and art majors, and they formed the Slave Pit Collective, which is an art collective, and started GWAR out of that. So, and we're all happier for it.
There you go.
The world is a much better place for GWAR's influence.
I gotta say, I'm not the biggest fan of the music, but I love the performance piece of it.
Yeah. There's a lot of folks who go to GWAR shows, but they're like, you know, hit or miss on the music, and you know, whatever. I mean, it's fun.
Yeah.
You know, whatever you get out of it.
Sure. And you put GWAR in your own book, so obviously you're a fan.
In Poser?
Yeah, in Poser.
Yeah, I Easter egged him into that. I Easter egged him into a Critical Hit from Black Mask too. There's a record store scene, and there's a GWAR record right behind the right behind the counter.
Oh, that's awesome! All right, yeah. So tell me about Poser. Well, no, don't tell me. I read it. Tell the other folks.
So it's a punk rock horror story. It's a punk rock slasher that kind of lays waste to some of the more problematic or tired tropes of the slasher genre. So I like to think it's a smarter slasher story. You might not get that out of just issue one because it's the setup, but you're going to be really surprised by issues three and four. So I hope people stick around because it's not what you're expecting.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. It reminded me, I'm sure you've heard this before, of like, I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Mm-hmm.
It's got kind of a similar setup, but obviously set in the punk rock scene in California. So
yeah,
I enjoyed that because even though I'm not much of a punk rocker now, I was in my younger high school days, you know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
A lot of the stuff kind of resonates with me, and I see a lot of that as true. And one thing that I found really interesting is the whole Poser wordplay in the book. So when the kids are kind of picking on this guy at the beach, right, before before the murder happens, they're like, oh, like you were hanging out with the hip hoppers yesterday. Now you want to come hang out with the punk rockers. You're such a poser. And I always thought to myself, like, it's so weird how true that is. But at the same time, how like counterintuitive it is, right? Cause punk rock is about like being yourself, right? And being different
and
embracing that. And these kids kind of don't see it that way. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, and that's exactly it. It's the conformity to the, or the individualism to the point of conformity, right? Mm-hmm. So you have all these kids picking on another kid because he's not punk enough or whatever. And it's like, man, you are missing the point. <You know? laughs> So it's commentary on the whole gatekeeping and, you know, of social scenes and gatekeeping that I see in comics now. And it's commentary on all of that. And it's like, you know, you have these gatekeepers, the kids at the beach picking on this nerdy kid who wants to join. Right. And, they're calling him a poser when, you know, ironically it's them that are doing all the posing. So that was intentional, you know, and it was meant to kind of shine a spotlight on that. It was something that always bothered me in the punk scene. It's less now. But, you know, when I was young, when I was a kid, it was, you know, people were very concerned about the image and, you know, this is back in the day when MTV played music, and oh my God, you couldn't like Rancid because Rancid was an MTV sellout. And oh my God, right. You couldn't like The Offspring, you know, because the same reason. And it was more about image than the politics or the scene or whatever. You know, and it depended on, you know, like who you were hanging out with in the scene. But I saw a lot of that, and I thought it was always so stupid because it's like, is this about individualism or not? Am I allowed to be myself, or do I have to be your version of the cool punk kid?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah.
There's a joke like that on, I don't know if you've ever seen Portlandia. But in one of the early seasons, the hipster guy, he's like going around and, what is it? Oh, he goes to the coffee shop. He's like, oh, this coffee shop's over. Like, I can't go to this coffee shop anymore. And eventually, like, the guy that he sees at the coffee shop becomes the hipster guy, and he starts doing the same thing. It's kind of the same thing with the punk rock scene, but really any scene whatsoever.
Right.
Where it's kind of, when it's kicking off, it's like, okay, you feel cool because you're the only one that knows about this, right?
Right.
And all
right.
of a sudden everybody knows about it, and you're like, it's not cool anymore.
But then you're fighting to keep people out, and it's like, yeah. that's not right. And you know, you see that in comics now, and it's like, you know, all the old guard of comics fans are fighting to keep out, you know, the women's and people of color and LGBT people. And it's like, that's not right. I mean, why are you fighting to keep girls out of comics? You know, all you straight white guys, why don't you want girls to have your interest? I don't understand that. So I mean, don't get me wrong, like, I love the punk scene more than just about anything. You know, I came up in the punk scene, I never really left. You know, it's very much a part of who I am. But I definitely see that, you know, especially back in the day, there was a lot of gatekeeping, there was a lot of, like, you know, judgment. And you know, that stuff wasn't so cool. And I think you see that reflected in Poser's pages, because you don't see that kind of gatekeeping in the current, like when it comes to the current Redondo Beach, LA area punk scene, you don't see that anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting. My brother is a little younger. He's about 6 years younger than I am, 6 and a half. And when he started kind of getting into the punk rock scene, things were changing quite a bit. So it was more like scene kids, I guess is what they call them.
Oh, like the emo kids?
Yeah, like emo kids.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny too, because I saw myself coming into this kind of like poser thing where I'm like, well, that's not punk rock. Like, you
right.
know, you're wearing makeup and like pink t-shirts. That's not punk rock.
Yeah, well. Let me introduce you to the New York Dolls and tell me that that's not punk rock then, right?
Very true. Very true.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you have bands like My Chemical Romance or whatever coming in, right?
Yeah.
And you have the old guard saying, well, that's not punk because, you know, we're old and, you know, I'm sure I said that too.
Yeah.
I mean, I like MCR. I really do. But you know, like I'm sure it seemed like an invasion on the scene, you know?
Yeah, that's true. But see, now that I'm old, now that I'm an old man, I mean, I just turned 37. I feel like, it's not even worth it. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I'm cool, man. Yeah, exactly. I'm older than you. I don't give a shit. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
If that's your thing, that's cool. You know?
Yeah. give me some teasers as to how Poser will progress as the issues move on. How are you going to turn this from a typical slasher story to something your own?
Well, I mean, I think if I give you any teasers, it runs the risk of giving away the end.
Okay.
You know, so that's a problem. Like, there's some tropes that aren't the problematic ones. You know, cause I mean, there's problematic tropes like, you know, a black person in a horror movie or horror story, you know, they're the first to die, right?
Sure, yeah.
And they're going to be caricatures, basically.
Yep.
Yeah. And, you're not going to see that in Poser.
Awesome.
You know, so, you know, we have, three people of color, I think, in the main cast. And, you know, it's not going to play out like that. You know, there's other tropes that, I do like the silent stalking slasher kind of trope. I like that, you know, that's classic slasher stuff, but the, But there's other problematic ones that, you know, we're going to flip on their heads and you're going to see something very different happen. Not that you're expecting.
Awesome. I like that.
Yeah. I wish I could go any deeper, but if I told you, like, oh, it's because of, you know, I hate this about horror movies, you'd be like, oh, then that means this about your book, you know, so I can't
do
that.
Sure. No, yeah. That's fair. So these books are not available digitally, not that I could find.
Yeah, that's true.
do you know if there's a plan to change that?
I don't know.
Okay.
Honestly. Yeah.
But if you're a comic shop, you can order Poser.
Yeah. Right through Diamond. Uh-huh.
Right through Diamond. Okay. Making sure. Because whenever I have a creator on, they're like, oh, well, like, that sounds really awesome, but I can't go in Comixology and get it.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's a choice that the publisher made. You know, I don't have any say on that. You know, it is what it is.
Sure.
You'll have to go paper on this one. you can buy the deluxe version with the vinyl through the waxworkcomics.com website, or you can get the version without the record through comic stores. You know, and they can order through Diamond, or I know it's sold out at the distributor level already.
Oh, no,
it came out yesterday.
Wow.
So it's sold out at the distributor level, but you know, if comic stores are like, man, I need to get this and quicker than Diamond will get it to me, they can contact me direct and I can put them in touch with Waxwork to sell direct too. So whatever works, you know?
Yeah.
I just want to get comics in people's hands. I'm happy.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
Doing it however.
and you know what's cool? Like, since you have this piece of physical media attached to it, I think it probably makes more sense to go and buy a physical copy than to just wait for Comixology, right? If that's ever an option.
I would say so. I like the feel that the physical media gives to the story too. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. I kind of like that tactile feel for this story. I'm not sure that digital would do it quite the same justice.
You're probably right. I mean, obviously I read a digital copy and the art's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. From you. should we do what is it? Whatever that is. Disclaimer. There you go. Disclaimer. I was provided a digital copy by Matt, but I think you're right. A lot of these books do look better in print. I mean, Clay's art's freaking awesome. Right?
He is. Yeah. He's amazing. And Doug's colors, Doug Garbar.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Phenomenal. Doug really channeled like Dario Argento in those colors. And that's what we were going for. So I don't know if you're familiar with Argento's work, like Suspiria and Deep Red.
Oh, Suspiria, yeah.
But yeah, so he uses a lot of very bold colors to kind of signify mood and danger and things like that. And Doug did that through Poser too. And Clay, he's an apprentice of Sean Murphy's, so that's why he's so freaking good.
Yeah. Gotcha. That makes sense.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Sean Murphy's a master, and Clay is right there too. I mean, he's getting so good.
He is. And it's so weird seeing, it's great, but seeing Sean Murphy go from like punk rock Jesus to doing a Batman story now, I just love that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think more books, by Sean Murphy is a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I would like to see, you know, more of his indie stuff like Punk Rock Jesus, you know, whenever he's able to do it.
Sure.
You know, but yeah.
Whatever pays the bills though, I guess.
I guess so, yeah. I mean, his stuff is phenomenal, so.
Agreed. All right, I'm gonna let you go.
All right, cool.
Why don't you let folks listening where they can find you and your work?
Okay. I'm on Twitter at MattMinerXVX. That's Miner with an E. Matt with two T's. And then MattMinerXVX.com for my blog site.
Thank you once again for listening to another episode of Comic Talk Today. Thanks again to Matt for joining me on the show. It was an absolute pleasure, and I look forward to future issues of Poser. I love this kind of story, so I'm super happy that it's being done. Just a heads up, if you missed yesterday's episode where I talked about the new DC Universe streaming service, I also did a video walkthrough on it. You can go to YouTube. I've got a link in the show notes so you can watch that. It's been very well received, so I may be doing some more videos in the future. Who knows? If you want to get in touch with me, of course, the best place is on Twitter at Geekvine. You can email nerdylegion@gmail.com. And I'll be back tomorrow with Secret Origins Martian Manhunter, which is very exciting because I didn't even plan this, but there's a new Martian Manhunter coming out in December, written by Steve Orlando. So check that out, and I'll catch you there.